7 years old, missing more than 2 years. So why is Harmony Montgomery only being reported missing now? Plus, a secret sex assault agreement is secret no more. Why Jeffrey Epstein's mysterious settlement could be music to Prince Andrew's ears. That is, if the judge agrees. And then, she fancied herself the next Steve Jobs. Only now Elizabeth Holmes is going to have to trade in that black turtleneck for an orange jumpsuit. How did she hoodwink so many bigwigs for billions? And finally, trapped on 95 as temperatures plunge. They were cold, hungry, and looking for a miracle. And they got one fresh out of the oven. It's all next. Welcome to Banfield. If you have ever had small children, you know the sheer panic that grips you the moment you realize they are out of sight for more than a minute. 5 minutes, and you are seized with fear, and it is bordering on terror. And more than that, you are calling the cops. So it is no surprise that people who have heard the story of seven-year-old Harmony Montgomery, now missing more than 2 years, are apoplectic that she was only reported missing this weekend. Tonight, the desperate search is on, one that should have started 26 months ago. Just over the weekend, police in Manchester, New Hampshire, put out a missing child alert for little Harmony. And ironically, the last people to see that little girl were officers themselves. Back then, Harmony was just 5 years old. Police paid a visit to her home after a call for service. But they're not saying what kind of service they were called to the home for. Instead, they themselves seem as surprised as any of us that she hasn't been seen since that call. This is what the Manchester Police Chief, Alan Aldenberg, said at a press conference.
Manchester Police became aware of this week. And I know people are going to say, well, here it is, 2021, almost 2022, and nobody's seen this young girl since late of October 2019. So what's happened in the last 2 years? Fair question, right? That's why I'm here today, because we need assistance, we need help, and we don't have many answers to many questions that we have.
On Sunday, police searched the home where officers say they last saw Harmony, that father's place. It's a home now owned by a person unconnected to the case, but where Harmony's dad once lived. Witnesses say they saw police put up tents there and spread out tarps in the backyard while police searched in that yard. A crime scene van was also spotted in the driveway, but the police are not saying anything about that search yet. Police also say they've interviewed, quote, many of Harmony's relatives, but they won't say which ones. They are not yet officially even releasing her mother's name, but a woman named Crystal Sorey has been identified by news reports as the mom. And Crystal Sorey posted several messages on Facebook last month saying that she and her family, quote, have filed dozens of reports of abuse and neglect, and nothing was done until I called the police and wrote a letter to the New Hampshire mayor. But all of those Facebook posts have since been deleted. The Manchester mayor, that office did tell the Washington Post that they received an email last week with concerns about both Harmony and the New Hampshire Department of Child Services. Mayor's office says they responded and forwarded the information to the police. Another woman who says that she's Harmony's older cousin has said that Harmony was known to be in the custody of her father. That claim has not yet been confirmed by the police either. Media reports identify the father as a man named Adam Montgomery. Another man named Kevin Montgomery told the Daily Beast that he's Adam's uncle. And he says he called the Department of Children, Youth and Families back in July of 2019 after he saw Harmony had a black eye. But he says nothing ever came of it. He then says 3 months later, he called the police out to the house where Harmony was living with her father and other family members. And if you do the math, 3 months from July 2019 is October 2019. And that is when police say they last saw that little girl. And talk a little bit about the investigation. Gil Alba is a former NYPD major case squad detective. He has been working with families to find missing people for 20 years now. Okay, Gil, geez, this one, I'm sure when it crossed your radar, I'll bet you thought, what on earth? How could this happen? So my first question to you is, kids can't just vanish. There's a system in place. There's, you know, official school paperwork has to be filed. You know, you can't just disappear without a trace unless you're stolen. And usually people will say something right away. So give me your thoughts on this.
You have to understand when a child is missing, especially with the police department, all the police officers go after that and want to find that child. And they take it personally, especially with the kid. So I know they're doing a timeline from the time she went to school. She was registered in school. I don't know if the father came and took her out of school. So because they never called. Otherwise, they would have been looking for her. For 2 years, actually, nobody has been looking for her. Nobody has been searching for her. And, you know, even the mother, said she was making all these complaints. I'm not sure about all that. But now the police are putting everything together. And that's why they were over that house as the last place they saw, where she was. And I'm sure that maybe somebody complained that he was in the backyard or digging up something or in a driveway. And that's why the police are trying to find any kind of evidence, DNA, anything they could find. Now, you know, the tough part about this is that they can talk to everybody. And then the father is the last person that was with her. He doesn't have to talk to the police. So that's the hardest part about anything like this. And when you don't get his part of the story, it's really becomes a tough case. And that's why police have all these officers working on this case, trying to get as much information as possible and try to solve this case, which is not an easy case after 2 years. And you see the little girl. And when he says how many places that they lived already, you know, that's a heartbreaking in itself. Those two kids, you know,
I think he said nine
places.
Nine foster homes. That's kind of crazy. Were, you know, five and seven, for heaven's sake. OK, I want to play something right now. It's the chief of the Manchester police when he was giving his press conference. And this was about, everything was so kind of vague and nebulous, which also bothered me, right? I was trying to get all the information I could get, and we got sound bites like this. Take a listen.
October 2019 time frame is when Harmony was last seen in the city of Manchester. All right, and that was by a combination of the Manchester Police Department and some other entities as well. All right, so that's that October 2009 time frame when she was last seen in the city of Manchester.
Okay, I don't know what that means. When you said that the Manchester police were there for a visit and other entities, I'm only going to guess, and maybe you are more wise to this than I am, maybe the other entities were the State Division for Children and Youth and Families, and maybe there's a privacy concern they can't say officially that the family services were visiting. But for God's sake, this little child has been missing 2 years. I think that that's the least of our worries, is saying who the last visitors were.
Especially when the police were there, child services were there. She supposedly had a black eye or something to that effect. She didn't look good at the time. So absolutely nothing happened with her all this time for the 2 years. And it seemed like nobody cared up to this point, except, somebody wrote a letter, which I'm pretty sure is the mother who wrote that letter. And then that's when all this action took place, where the police are looking for her. Now, there's two ways they're looking for her. Is now they're going to search and ask everybody to come forward. They got rewards and everything else. And on the other hand, could something have happened to her? And that's why they have to go in two different directions at this point, at this particular point. And that's why probably the search on the grounds. So they're going to continue this, and they're not going to give up. And it's, like I said, it's not going to be an easy case. The father has past record and with drugs, and the mother has with drugs.
I will say this, Gil. It's weird. They say they're not searching for anyone right now but Harmony, and I think that's odd, except they said she's not with who she's supposed to be with. I got to wrap it there, but Gil, I'm not going to leave this story, so I'm going to call you again when we get the next few developments, and maybe you can make more sense of them than I can. But thank you, Gil Alba. Always good to see you.
Yeah, it's a sad story. Sad story. Okay, thank you.
I'll say. Boy, oh boy, I will say that. Okay, I'm going to switch gears because there's another story that crossed our radar today, and it's big. I think it's huge. It's a deal with the devil. It's a deal with the devil that just might help Jeffrey Epstein save his friends from beyond the grave. I'm talking about a big settlement that was inked between Epstein while he was alive and one of his main accusers, Virginia Roberts Giuffre. I know you've heard her name before, but you don't know what was in that deal because it just got cracked open. It was signed back in 2009. It's been under lock and key ever since, but now it's being publicized. And according to the deal, Epstein agreed to pay Virginia Roberts Giuffre $500,000, half a million, and, quote, other valuable consideration. I really don't know what that means. She'd get all that if she agreed to drop the lawsuit that she'd filed against him. That suit alleged that Epstein trafficked her into sexual abuse and exploitation and forced her to have sex with other men. Here's the weird part. The agreement doesn't name any names, but there is one part of the deal that seems to reference the accusations. It comes in section 2 of the agreement. It's under the heading General Release. Now, you're going to have to stick with me because it's a little chunky. It says, forever discharge the said second parties and any other person who or entity who could have been included as a potential defendant, parentheses, other potential defendants, from all and all manner of action and actions of Virginia Roberts. I know it just sounds like law trickery, but I'm here to tell you the translation is basically other people can't be sued. And yes, it is written in a really vague way. But it's the part about the, quote, other potential defendants that's really key to this story. Because in case you have forgotten, Virginia Roberts Giuffre is the woman who's now accused Prince Andrew of having sex with her when she was just 17 at Epstein's direction. And it is that part of her settlement with Epstein that the lawyers say that gets Prince Andrew off the hook from Virginia's lawsuit against His Highness. That's something that Epstein's other victims do not want to see happen. One of them, Dr. Annie Farmer, who testified during Ghislaine Maxwell's trial, just sent me this statement. She said, I stand with the other women who were abused by Epstein and Maxwell, and I hope that the other individuals who participated in their abuse are not able to continue to hide behind borders and privilege. Read into that what you will, but that's interesting. So will Virginia's suit against the prince be tossed out of court? I don't know, but I'll tell you something. The hearing this morning was pretty darn heated. The judge, named Louis J. Kaplan, said he'll decide soon, just soon. That was it. But I want to bring in two people who know about this case better than almost anyone. Joshua Schiffer is a lawyer whose firm represented one of Epstein's other accusers. And Hillary Fordwich is an expert observer of the royal family who spent decades as the head of global business and development and marketing for several international firms. Hello, you two. Okay, Josh, I'm going to start off with you. I am no lawyer, but I do feel like in the hearing today, the judge seemed to be sliding over towards Virginia's camp, basically because the judge said that this was a secret agreement between two people, Epstein and Virginia, and that only those two parties can actually enforce this thing. Well, one of them is dead, so Jeffrey's not going to be doing anything about this. And the other one sure doesn't want to enforce the agreement. So as a lawyer, Josh, does that sound like the prince is in trouble?
I think that for that portion of the argument, the prince is pretty sunk. And from what I've seen from the hearing this morning, the judge was really telegraphing clearly that this hiding behind the broad and vague release, something that is traded back and forth thousands of times across the nation every single day, this is the meaning of boilerplate. And this boilerplate release, I don't believe, and I don't believe the judge feels, that it protects the prince in really any way. That's going to set up the next questions the court's going to be inquiring into.
Okay, which is?
Well, the big issue that I see coming up is that the prince had sex, allegedly, with a woman who was of legal age, and while she is a victim of trafficking, clearly now that Ghislaine Maxwell has been convicted, what is the prince's civil liability as an uninvolved co-conspirator, I guess, of an alleged trafficking plan? And can David Boies bring a case successfully with a cause of action where the prince is held liable when he was just the recipient of a trafficked person and is going to claim that he didn't have anything to do with trafficking in the first place?
Oh, my gosh. You think 10 steps ahead. And I love that about you because you're right. It doesn't matter what age you are. Trafficking is trafficking and it is illegal. But I'll tell you something else. Hillary Fordwich, while everyone plays parlor games trying to figure out what's going to happen legally, all I keep thinking is it doesn't matter when it comes to the royals because they're not amused. And all of it is ugly, no matter what way you slice it, because either the prince is, you know, using all this trickery, saying I'm Epstein's best friend and I'm in there as a defendant, so I get a free pass, which is ugly and so not royal, or he's just going to have to, you know, toss caution to the wind and, you know, try for one of these other awful defenses like trafficking. Like, all of it's got to be just hideous for this family over there.
Well, pleasure to be back with you, Ashley. And you're right, absolutely hideous, absolutely ghastly for the royal family in every single regard. And actually also for the military. The top brass of the military has said that his behavior and his conduct has been toxic and is untenable. So he holds 9 honorary military titles, and as well as his title as the Duke of York. And all of those at the moment are, the military titles are in abeyance, meaning they've sort of been held. He has not appeared at any military events due to this abeyance ever since this entire case is broken. So yes, it's the military concern, it's the royal family's concern, and it's the nation's concern, because he is, you know, a member of the royal family, and it's been, you know, obviously YouGov has reported that he's now only about 6% of the population ever believed anything in that interview, and he's now at the very bottom of every single royal poll. So you're right, Ashley. I mean, this isn't good in any way. Most importantly, also going forward, you know, obviously, for the victims, this is absolutely a travesty. And for the Queen, who spent her lifetime serving the nation, her Platinum Jubilee is coming up now in June of 2022, right now where we are. And in a few months' time, that's supposed to take place. Well, this is a tremendously ghastly shadow hanging over her and hanging over those celebrations.
You know, ghastly sounds so much more ghastly when you say it with your accent. I'm not going to lie. I only have 30 seconds left, Hillary, but you have to help me on this one. There's a report out that Ghislaine Maxwell got a phone call while she was in the Huskow from her husband, who asked for a divorce. Reportedly, he had moved on with a yoga instructor. Do you know anything about, well, I mean, yikes, that's got to be a, you know, kick me when you're down moment. But do you know anything about it?
Well, what I do know is that she transferred all her assets to him prior to going to jail, obviously wanting to protect those assets. And as to that relationship, yes, it is purported and alleged. I can't say anything further. I'm not privy to the details of that relationship. But he does have, I believe, all of her assets. And yes, surprising, particularly with this ruling, the recent ruling that he would obviously want a divorce.
You know what? I have this little person in my ear who gives me a countdown, and she just said, oh, that's so savage. And that's all I can think about is how savage that really is. Hey, you two, Joshua and Hillary, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure, Ashley.
Thank you.
Wow. All the assets. Now half of them might go to the yoga instructor. All fair in love and war. Okay, you know, this was supposed to change everything that we think about healthcare. An idea so revolutionary that one percenters like Rupert Murdoch and the family behind Walmart and the Secretary of Education, they were all just throwing money at this lady. But now this lady, a young tycoon behind what turned out to be a real house of cards, she's about to be thrown in the big house. Where did all the billions go and what on earth happened? That's next. It is not the way anyone wanted to start the first work week of 2022, stuck in a massive traffic backup for more than 30 hours as temperatures and gas levels plunged. The pictures have been jaw-dropping. 50 miles of cars and trucks jammed up on I-95 in Virginia as a massive snowstorm froze them all in place. People were shivering as they waited for help. They were low on gas and food and water and morale. Even a United States senator trying to get to Capitol Hill for a vote spent a full day and sleepless night trapped with nothing to eat or drink, shutting off the heat and the ignition to conserve gas. What I basically just described is a classic winter nightmare, one that Casey Houlihan and her husband John Noe lived through themselves. They were trying to get from Maryland to North Carolina, but they were trapped somewhere in between. Stuck and frustrated and hungry, they spotted a Schmidt Baking Company truck up ahead, and they decided to call the company. Within 20 minutes, their prayers were answered. A return call from one of the owners of the company who said, hey, pass the phone to the driver of the truck. The driver of the truck cracked open the cargo, and with the help of others, they started passing out bread to over 50 cars full of fellow stranded motorists. And Casey and John join me live now. What a brilliant idea. The two of you should get a Bronze Star and a Hero's Welcome and all the other accolades. I have a question. Did you get to where you were going? Did you make it to North Carolina?
Yes, ma'am. We did end up making it.
Phew, lucky, lucky. Okay, so let's go to this phone call that you call the baking company, Schmidt Baking Company. Did you expect to hear back? And when you did, what were you thinking?
Absolutely not. We kind of called them on a whim, but the woman on the customer service line was just so helpful, and she got us where we needed to be. So we got that call from Chuck. It was really incredible. And he just told them to open it up.
It's just great. Chuck Paterakis, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but he then tells you, hand the phone to the driver. And what did the driver do when you knocked on the door?
He was definitely a little shocked to be getting a call from his CEO, I'll tell you that.
I'll bet. But right away, boom, cracked it open. And then what happened next when you saw, you know, everything in the back of the lorry?
Yeah, we just started grabbing loaves of bread and carrying it to all the cars that we could see and passing it out. People kept coming out asking us for food for their kids and for their animals. And it was really heartwarming to be able to pass it out to them.
That must have been the looks on people's faces. First, when they didn't quite know what you were up to, did they think you were a bit kooky?
Definitely. I think they thought we were crazy, going a little stir crazy.
Well, one of the senators, Tim Kaine, said that he'd had two cups of coffee on Monday morning, and this afternoon, about 4 o'clock or so, he'd still had nothing. He'd been in the car the whole time. Is that the way you would have been had you not gotten these loaves of bread?
Yeah, absolutely. We had been without food or water for about 37 hours, and a very kind truck driver gave us some water, but that bread was like pretty much the first food we had in a very long time, so we were so thankful for it.
Same with the other people who were stuck, John?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'm so glad that you did that. Okay, so let's give a shout out again to Schmidt Baking Company. That was just glorious what they did. If you could tell them, because you're on national TV now, so your microphone's yours. If you have a message for Schmidt Baking Company, what is it?
We definitely appreciate them reaching out. Like Casey said, we didn't expect to hear back from them, but Chuck got back to us very promptly, and he made it clear that this is something that Schmidt's all about. They regularly donate to charities and people in need, so he was more than glad to help, and we were glad to be able to help those in need.
Awesome. What a great story. I'm glad, because it's been a real stinker of a story all day to see what everyone's had to go through. So Casey and John, A, thank you for having the chutzpah and the smarts to call the company. And then B, thank you for, you know, sharing the wealth with all the other drivers. I'm glad you got to where you were going.
Thank you so much.
Ah, I love that story. What a good way to end the day on, like I said, a stinker of a day. The experience that Casey and John went through and all those other thousands of drivers, it got us to thinking, what was the longest traffic jam in American history? And I'm talking about time stuck on the road. Was it Chicago back in February of 2011? That was the Snowmageddon. Was it Bethel, New York, August 1969 for Woodstock? Or was it I-45 in Texas right after the Hurricane Rita evac? The answer's next. So what was the longest traffic jam in American history? There are your three choices. It was B, Bethel, New York, because that was Woodstock, my friends. So the people who spent 3 days The townspeople had to feed them with food and water, too. But at least they could probably hear the wail of Jimi Hendrix's guitar and Janis Joplin's voice, because nobody complained. They had a blast. I had a blast being here with you tonight. We'll see you tomorrow, 10 Eastern. See you then.